Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island-chained paradise in the sunny slave South Pacific, where all the Fukushima radiation is really good for the sunbathers, so they can soak up some extra rays. And my very special guest is Ole Damigod. and I like the fact that his name's Ole, and he's living in Spain. You know, you can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. You have a website as well, lightonconspiracies.com. So how about we start this off by you explaining to me and obviously the audience members who haven't heard of you yet a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay. My body was born in Denmark many years ago, and I moved to Sweden, grew up in Sweden, and then I started working there as a then I turned a profession into journalism, and I started as a journalist for quite a few years. Meanwhile, while I was doing that, I started becoming almost obsessed about the JFK assassination. This was in the early 1980s, and when I saw the Zapruder film for the very first time, that's the film where one bystander has filmed the whole assassination, where it's so clear to see that the final headshot that killed JFK actually came from the front right and not from where we were told, behind and up on the sixth floor. So at that point, I just felt, my God, something really weird is going on here, because we're being pumped with one version that is an absolute lie. It's very obvious that it's a lie. So that started me on a 30-year quest almost to find the truth. And I read a couple of hundred books of the JFK assassination. And while doing that, I really started becoming more interested in the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination, and so on. And then while I was deeply involved in trying to uncover what actually happened, the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, was gunned down. It's almost on the day today. It was on the 28th of February, 1986. He was shot down by yet another lone crazy guy. And it just, like during these years, after a while, I started to see that these political assassinations, it was almost like they were carried out by a template that, like, they were using like a bullet point list on how to be able to kill a person in a high political position, and how to get away with it, how to dupe the population into thinking that it was a work of a lone crazy guy, instead of that it was actually a massive force of violence with a political overtake, or not even political, a criminal overtake of a country.
Rather large quantity of crazy people rather than just the one.
There you go. And I wouldn't say crazy people, because the people they've used are most of the time highly skilled assassins who are just very drilled in what they're doing. They have no personal motive at all. They're just there as hired killers and trained assassins. And that's, they do their job. They have absolutely no idea who ordered it, who financed it, why they're doing it. They're just carrying out their job. And this is where all of these operations are highly compartmentalized. It's built up on a need-to-know chain, a need-to-know basis, where you only know your very little part, and you have absolutely no idea about what the other people are doing. And this is it's done that on purpose, so that if somebody would decide to start talking or becoming a whistleblower, they will only know very, very little. And also, while they carry one of these hits out, most of the time it's combined with a drill at the same time, a drill that is doing exactly the same, but then halfway suddenly go live without the people who are part of the drill have absolutely no idea that suddenly they're part of a live action. And this took me, like I say, on a very... quite dark and scary road for many, many years, because once you start digging into these things, I'm sure you're very aware of that, you come into what looks like the work of a lone crazy guy. Suddenly you come up higher and higher up in the power pyramids and into the dark corridors of power, which are not the ones that you see normally on TV and so on. It's behind the scenes. And the people behind the scenes, the hidden hand, have a very violent way of dealing with problems. And when you dig too deep for the truth, you become a problem. So, and this is why I'm in Spain. It's 14 years today. And I left Sweden because I had two friends who died, they were murdered. And I got very scared there. So I left Spain I left Sweden to come here to Spain, and here I finished my book. It's called Coup d'État in Slow Motion, about the killing of the Swedish Prime Minister, but also with all the different connections globally, because there's so. This is the thing that I believe that I've been given the gift to be able to uncover this, how they are connected, because it's not only the same power elite that has been behind, I would say more or less all of these terror acts from the 50s and up to until today, but they even many, many times have used the same team of assassins, and I've been able to identify them all, at least most of them, and how they are connected, who did what in where and so on. So depending on what you're interested in, I can go into great details about any of these assassinations, who did what, and how they're connected with the other events and so on.
Okay. Well, I have one statement and one joke for you. Now, you moved to Sweden. You weren't born there. Did you become a Swedish citizen?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Nope.
So you're not technically an artificial Swedener?
Nope.
And also the other part, one person asked me, why don't any of these evil people get assassinated? And I said, it's simple. It's very simple. Only good people would want to see the bad people actually get assassinated, and good people aren't assassins.
Well, there you go. I mean, I wouldn't assassinate anyone. I mean, it's not in my genes, but they have a very, like I say, a very violent way of dealing with problems. And one of the problems is, one of the ways to do that is accidents, sudden cancer, suicides where you stab yourself 15 times, shooting yourself from behind with a shotgun, or drown yourself in your bathtub while being fully dressed, these type of suicides. And no, it's a scary road to go down, and I feel maybe like yourself, that it's like treading in a minefield. You're walking in a minefield, but you do not know when you step on a mine that you find out once it's too late. So
do you know what are the parameters? I mean, you've had a look at the methodology by which they assassinate people. Have you looked at a methodology for how they select the targets? What is a no-no that will get you blown away?
I would say most of the time, the people they choose to take out, many of them are taken out very discreetly, you know, suicides, heart attacks, cancer and so on. But then from time to time, they need to statue an example and to scare people back in line and scare people to shut up. And that's why they commit things like the JFK assassination so openly, right in front of all these cameras, right in front of the whole world seeing. That was a statement, a power statement, saying that we can get anyone at any time, so you better back up and shut up. And this is also why I would say you can often see that after these conspiracies, the big ones, there's like a second conspiracy, but of silence afterwards, where the whole government or whatever in that country will just follow the general official guideline, which is, it was the Patsy, it was the Patsy, it was the Patsy. No critical questions, no nothing, just silence, silence, silence. Because people in so-called power, then they're very rarely aware of the details, who carried it out, who killed this person and so on. They don't know that, but they know the power behind it, and they know that they could be next in line if they don't behave.
So why do you think, I mean, just your personal opinion, that JFK got put on that list for assassination? What did he do to make them do it to him?
There were several reasons. It's like very rarely is there only one reason they take one out. Like you asked, who do they take out? Either it's a real enemy of theirs, so a real opponent, or it's someone in their own lines that they who have become too big-headed or who have become too scared and are sort of at the risk of starting to blow the whistle or talk too much or whatever. But sorry, could you repeat the question? With JFK, the reason why he was taken out, there was, like I say, several reasons, because the power that was behind this assassination was a combination. It was not the CIA, the KGB, or the Secret Service or so on, or Jackie. I mean, there are all these weird conspiracies theories going on. But it was a combination, an unholy liaison between the CIA, the mob, the Secret Service, the Dallas Police, the oil tycoons, the military-industrial complex, and the government. Rogue parts of these groups were together in this unholy alliance. And one of the things that they did was to everyone, just like when they killed Julius Caesar, everybody had to dip their hands in blood so that nobody could point accusingly at someone else. So all had to supply shooters and be part of this assassination. And this is why, if you want to, later we can go into great detail and I will identify the different shooters and who, where they came from and who they were representing and so on. But with JFK, the reason why he was taken out were, like I said, several. One of them were that he decided to withdraw from Vietnam. I think it came to a point during what was called the Cuban Missile Crisis, where there was a Russian ship on its way towards Cuba, where Castro had taken over. And on the ship, they had the satellites had identified missiles. And so JFK and his government warned Russia and Khrushchev, saying that if you pass this latitude, we will start a nuclear war with you. And by mistake, this ship actually crossed this line. So JFK was in a position where he was almost sitting with a button, with a finger on the button, and the whole military leadership around him was saying, like, push it, push it, push it, because their agenda, the whole military-industrial complex, their agenda is death and destruction. They do not want peace or harmony, all of these. It's death, destruction, drugs, and multi-billion incomes from all over. So they were pushing him to do this, but he sat there. There were people there who said that he sat with tears in his eyes and he said, I just refuse to be the one who does this to the world. And from that point, he suddenly changed. It was almost like an enlightenment or a, I would say, like a change of person.
A Kundalini awakening.
Exactly, like a change of personality. Suddenly, he became from a good president, but very flamboyant and, very much into women and glitter, glamour, all of this thing. He suddenly became this very, very strong individual who said, we have to stop this madness and I am in a position where I can do it. So at that point, after that, he suddenly took a totally new direction where he said, I'm going to crush the CIA into 1,000 pieces. And he kicked out people like Alan Dulles, which it was absolutely unheard of. Alan Dulles was so crucial in the whole creation of Operation Gladio in Europe, in Operation Paperclip, where they exported all these Nazis from Germany into the States and other countries, the building up of OSS, which later turned into the CIA, and so on. Also, Bissell, General Bissell, and General Charles Cavell. These three he kicked out from the CIA. Absolutely, they were holy cows, untouchables. He kicked them out. He said, we're going to withdraw out of Vietnam, which was a war that hadn't even really started on the American part. It was a French war that America went in there to take over because of the drug trading from the Golden Triangle, the old former Indochina. And he said, at that point, the states only had 16,000 advisors there. He said, we're going to withdraw there. We're going to take out 1,000 people. And by the, I think it was by the end of 1965, everyone would be out there. So that just freaked the military industrial complex out, because they were so set to make billions over there and also get the whole drug trafficking going. So that was also, he turned towards the mob that was partly helping him to come into power through his father, and especially to Sam Giancana in Chicago. He suddenly said, thank you so much for helping me get into power. What I will do is I will chase you down one by one and chop your head off. And he put his brother, Robert Kennedy, in charge of doing that. So Robert Kennedy started to, it was like a witch hunt on the mob. And in 1 year, I think it was 700% higher, what do you call it, verdicts or people put away 700% more than the year before. They were just like, the mob was really in a very critical state. Then he, there were other reasons as well, was that Lyndon Johnson, who he had been forced to take as his vice president, Lyndon was a very, very criminal person who had killed at least seven other people on his way to power. And one of the people, or the main person he used, was a man by the name of Malcolm Wallace, who was also present in Dealey Plaza later. One of the people that Malcolm killed was Lyndon Johnson's own sister, who was, she was drinking too much and she was sleeping around and she was talking very much too much. So he had her killed off. And he was facing, just before the JFK assassination, he was facing that this whole thing would go public and that he would face a long time in jail. His whole career would go down. And he knew that if JFK had lived to the next election, he would be out and he would be in jail. So he was deeply involved in this assassination, as were J. Edgar Hoover, who the chief of the FBI, who also knew that if JFK got reelected, J. Edgar Hoover would be out, and he was the creator of the FBI, or the one who made it legendary, and a total corrupt person who he just said, I'm in, I will help to cover the whole thing up, but you have to give me the leadership of the FBI for the rest of my life, which is exactly what happened. There were many more reasons as well. There were also, JFK wanted to get free from the Federal Bank Reserve, which is not a federal governmental bank, but an extremely criminal private bank coalition that is now controlling the American society. And through the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, loads of other people, countries globally as well.
Well, I wouldn't call them a banking coalition so much as a banking cartel.
There you go. I'm not really sure if there's such a big difference in the two, but if bank cartel would be more correct. That's true.
Yeah. Cartel just sounds criminal. Coalition sounds like, I don't know, we've got legitimacy for invading a sovereign nation that never attacked anybody.
No, they're super criminal. Super, yeah. Super criminal. So I think these are the main reasons. There are also theories,
so,
but
so
I don't...
May I just try and sum this up? So JFK pissed off the FBI head, the CIA head, his vice president, and the criminals that were operating the mob in the United States. Probably the most dangerous groups of people you could ever try and piss off, wouldn't you say? And
yep.
You know what this reminds me of? The Dark Knight. You know, the second Batman film, if you've seen it, reminds me of the part where Batman and the police take down the remaining mob members in the city, and the mob retaliates by killing the judges, and trying to kill the chief prosecutor, and of course trying to kill Batman. And Alfred, Batman's assistant, said, you always knew that things would have to get worse before they got better. There would have to be casualties. You don't think that you could mess with all these people without consequence, did you?
Sounds very similar.
How do you feel, emotionally speaking, when you discover that kind of information, that the world is not as it seems? How does it actually feel? Is it just fear, trepidation, that kind of thing? Did you go through an emotional process when you were learning this information?
Extremely emotional, because I had absolutely no idea. And especially growing up in a country, like I said, I moved to Sweden when I was a kid. I was raised in a country where I thought, you know, the police are the good guys, you can trust the government, it's a perfect democracy, we are the helpers of the weak and the poor in the country. And then discovering that in Sweden they were actually following the exact same template as they were using in the other assassinations, meaning that they were somehow connected, that just freaked me out. Because one of the things in this template is that the investigation that is put there to investigate the crime are actually part of the assassination itself. They are just there as a wall of stop, do not enter, and they went that away, that away, that away. That's their whole job, and then stop people like myself. Meaning that I was waking up into the fact that I was living in a corrupt society where the police were actually taking part of killing people that were looking to uncover what had happened to the country's leader. It was highly emotional, I would say, because, and this is, it's been very emotional over the years, because it's just like mind-blowing to see that the world is so different to what I was raised up and grew up to believe.
Ironically enough, when you discover the truth of how the world is being run and you see the insanity of it, all the normal people who don't have any idea how the way the world is really run see you as the crazy one, don't they?
Join the club. It's, yeah, that's the thing. For many years, you know, this is, it's almost like there are different stages, I think, when people wake up. I mean, I woke up so many years ago, so I can see it maybe on I get a more of an overview. The first one is that you deny, you cannot believe what people tell you, that this could actually happen, because it's so unreal, so mind-blowing. But once you start getting to see that, my God, it's actually true, this is actually going on, then you become almost obsessed, I would say. This is a standard phase for most people. So they dig into this wholeheartedly, and they try it, but what they do is they go into all of these dark areas, and they're not grounded in themselves, which means that they go into like a downward spiral, and people around them cannot bear to hear. It's like, shut up, I don't want to hear anything more about all of these awful things. But you become, they're so obsessed, I was as well. And so people label you as crazy, they put a tinfoil hat on your head and dismiss you. So after that, at least for myself, I came to a point where, okay, I'm just going to shut up. I'm not going to tell people. I'm going to continue, but I'm not going to talk about it, because the thing is, people don't want to wake up. They want to wake up in their own time and own space, and you can't force people to do it. You just get the opposite reaction.
Yeah.
So, and it's painful to wake up. So I would very much suggest that don't try and force people to wake up. Live by example instead. Show that you can find out these things, that you can still stand up in truth and without going into the feelings of hate or revenge, or this is at least my way, not pro-violence, not pro-revenge, not pro-hate, but to be able to continue to expose this, but with the intention to lift it, you know. It's like, I don't hate these people, I just want it to stop, you know. I just want them to be the whole thing revealed, so that they can't get away with it anymore. So it will stop, because this world is meant to be a beautiful place. It, the whole nature, everything is designed for absolute harmony and beauty and unity. And then there's this like small group of extreme bullies that are terrorizing the neighborhood, and we're letting them get away with it. They're like a couple of thousand, and we're 7 billion. It's an absolute joke that we are in the state that we are.
Now, what occurs to me there is that the emotional hit when you learn about the conspiracy world and the New World Order and so forth is double-fold, right? It's twofold, because number one, your entire perception of reality has to change, and that in itself is emotional baggage. And as you say, you become obsessed, and then emotional hit number two comes into play. All the people that you think are your friends that would listen to you and so on and so forth, oomph. It's like an emotional ostracization as well as an emotional crippling at the exact same time. In so doing, it occurs to me that there are people like us, not exactly like us, who have woken up to this truth, but instead of learning how to cope with it, learning how to stay reasonable, stay grounded, it damages them permanently, and they lose the ability to socially interact with others. I think it was something I watched. It's funny you should mention the Martin Luther King assassination, because I watched his full 18-minute reflecting pool speech, you know, the I Have a Dream speech today. And one of the things that he was saying, and something you reminded me of, was in our thirst for freedom, let's not drink from the cup of bitterness and revenge. Mm-hmm. And it's quite profound, because I've also, just today, for example, watched two speeches from the 60s, the other being from Mario Silos or something. His name's Mario, and it's the machine speech about how sometimes the machine and its workings become so odious and make you so sick at heart that you can't even participate in it anymore. You can't even passively participate, and that you have to throw your bodies on the gears and on the levers and on the wheels, and you have to make it stop. And I'm thinking that those kind of speeches that were done so many decades ago are so profoundly, shall we say, relevant to today's world. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, before every interview I give, I'm not a religious person, but I really pray that my words will spread peace and harmony and help to lift the world instead of spreading fear and all of these dark feelings. If that would be the case, I would shut up. But I've noticed that during this year and a half that I've been giving all these interviews, that that the response, thank God, have been extremely positive. That people get back to me saying that, my God, now I start to believe in humanity again. I've given up the thought of revenge. Now I focus on helping my surroundings and so on. That if that was not the case, like I say, I would shut up. Because the main thing to do is to raise this whole thing, to lift it out of the grip of this school bully. But it takes courage. It really takes courage, because you need to stand up in truth and courage and balance and say, enough. We have had enough. We don't want you any evil or anything bad. We just want you to stop it. Just like the Truth and Reconciliation Committee in South Africa and so on, where they took and put together the victims and the torturers and so on, and gave the guilty parts amnesty in the long run, as long as they totally went clear, total transparency on what had actually happened, so that the body slowly could heal from all of these awful things that had happened. You know, because this is the thing, I feel it's almost we got like this beautiful body, and it's beautiful, but there is a cancer growth. And if we do not expose it, if we don't open up, even though it's painful and smelly, if we do not open and expose the cancer growth, the body will die. But if we do that, the body has this amazing ability to heal itself and so on. So I'm only doing this with the intention of healing. I'm digging myself into all of these very, very dark areas and awful, awful things and terror acts and killings and all of this, but with the intention of healing and lifting. So this is my quest.
Are you familiar with the concept of the wounded healer?
It's nope.
It's a shamanistic thing, whereby you're actually a hell of a lot more capable of helping other people through with their pain, their trauma, if you've been through it yourself and not entirely gotten over it yourself either.
I think that's really interesting, and I think many of us who are standing up in these times are wounded healers. I mean, we've been bashed around and kicked around and you name it, lost friends and had to go through traumas like changing countries, all of these things. I mean, many of the true speakers nowadays have been going through hell, absolute hell. But it's only through that those experiences, at least on my own part, that has made it possible for me to go into, pass through these dark stages and then come out on the other side where love is the answer. And just like you say, I think also if people are very depressed at the moment and they don't know what can I do? Because it looks so overwhelming when you dig into these things. It looks like the game over a long time ago and we just, the only thing option is to lie down and die. I would say it's the absolute opposite, that when you focus too much on your own problems, I, me, mine, that is more or less what is called depression. That gets you into a downward spiral where you just, oh my God, and you're going down, down, down. Mm. The way out is to reach out and help someone, anyone. The more you go away from your own problems and focus on somebody else's, like a wounded healer, but helping other people, that starts raising the energy. It raises your energy, it raises their energy, you feel better, they feel better, people who see this act of kindness feel better, and you start raising the thing. Mm. And this thing with energies, it's not like a new age, hocus pocus. The elite are extremely aware of this, and this is why they're trying to push us down all the time through media and TV. All of this fear, 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 violence that is being pumped on us is to push us down so that our energy is on a level that they can control more easily. So the higher, the more you raise your energy by feeling gratitude and compassion and all these feelings, the more you raise yourself, the harder it is for them to reach you.
So, I think you and I are on the exact same level there. In fact, I remember this one time, one of my guests cancelled out on my show at the last minute. Right? And I was really, really pissed off about it, because he's quite rude about it too. I won't mention who it is. And instead of just sitting there stewing and getting angrier and angrier, although I wanted to, I organized to help 10 people because one person screwed me over. And I felt a hell of a lot better. I was like, oh my God, I'm the better man. Ha 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 ha.
I think you turned a difficult situation into something absolutely beautiful. So I salute you for that one.
Yeah.
But this is the way to do it. We can all do it. It's a template of how to, you can, but because by, there's so many people who have lost hope today. There's so many people that feel so pushed down and it's done by design as well. These difficult financial times have not just occurred. They were part of a design, very deliberate design, to push us down again and again. The thing is that they want to keep us on the lowest possible level, financially as well. Not so that we start starving, because if you go hungry, you have a revolution on your hand. So they don't want you to get on that state to get hungry, but totally helpless. That is the point. So with mortgages and debts and all of these banks chasing you, and that's where they want you. And by the way, do you know the meaning of mortgage?
Death grip.
Mortgage means mortage, and it's a French word, and it means death exactly. So that is really, that is one to stay away from.
Yeah, indeed. So, now, one of the other elements that I think is very important to note is when you first start waking up to this stuff, there's a lot of confusion, mostly about your place in the world. And I had somebody come at me yesterday, and I think you'll like this story. It was kind of like, Vinny, what do I do once I find out all this information? And I go, well, finding out the information exists and accepting it for what it is, that's step one. However, step two is learning how to cope with that information, all right? So it doesn't drive you insane, doesn't turn you into a fetal position every time you think about it, that kind of thing. And I chose to use a bit of humor, a little bit of comedy in order to balance out the equation there amidst all the scumbaggery. And then there's two steps you've got to do after that. First step, figure out how you personally can contribute to making a difference. It's all very well knowing the information, but if you don't know how you fit in the jigsaw and how you can make a difference for humanity, how you can actually make this world a better place, it's not any good, is it? No matter how well you can cope with the information. And then the final step is actually going out and making that difference after you've figured out how you can contribute.
I applaud that.
Mm-hmm. It's not too complicated, and also we always worry and we always beat ourselves up. It's like, oh, am I doing enough? Why won't the people wake up? I feel so stressed out. I've got so much anxiety and depression. It's just like, stop wallowing. Okay, things are about as bad as they're gonna get for you, and now you got to figure out a way to do something about it. Otherwise, you can just, I don't know. Like the elites say, they say they want a great culling and whatnot. My advice to the elite is, if you want so many people to die and what have you, volunteer. You know, nobody's stopping you. Go for your life, son.
Do you know there's a beautiful video on YouTube? It's called The Tiny Dot. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's really, really good. It's like a cartoon, but it's really describing the whole position about the amount of people, you know, they've got round dots. They're this amazing, incredible area of rounded dots like this. And then there's this tiny little elite that are trying to control us. And when you look at it on the screen, you can't even see the tiny little dot. I mean, how small it is. That are controlling us, that we are letting control us. It's quite a funny description, and it shows very, it gives a very good overview of how ridiculous this whole thing is.
Also, very similar to the picture that came out of New Zealand of a group of sheep standing together with a farmer and a sheepdog standing next to them, and one sheep standing apart from the herd, and he goes, "Guys, I'm telling you. The dog and the farmer are working together." And the other sheep go, Trevor, you and that conspiracy nonsense.
Once again, a perfect picture, perfect image. But the whole thing is, what is crazy about this whole thing is that we're doing it to ourselves. This is the thing that just is mind-blowing when you think of it. We are doing it to ourselves. We are controlling ourselves. We, the people who manufacture, you know, surveillance cameras or drive the trucks to FEMA camps or are in uniforms controlling the population or our police officers thinking that we're doing, that they're doing, you know, taking care of the population and working for freedom and so on. Absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
They have to really start educating themselves to see whose agenda they're working for. The same with soldiers. It's so tragic when you see it. People signing up thinking that we're going to other countries to liberate them. Absolute, once again, bollocks. You are being used, you in uniform, as brutal enforcers going in there, killing and slaughtering innocent people, children, women, innocent people, for the greed of people you don't even know, bankers, and these Illuminati Freemasonry people, that you are there bloody sword killing and just opening up for drug trading and weapon smuggling and pedophile gangs and so on, at the same time as you're being pumped with that you are doing something good, because they call it Operation Freedom or Operation Stardust or whatever. It is absolutely not true. So I would say, people in uniform and the rest of us, it is time to wake up. Mm. It is time to educate yourself and find out what's going on, whose agenda. Same with parents. Do not pump your children with these awful vaccines. Educate yourself. Find out what is in these vaccines. Why have they put these awful, awful things into these vaccines? And who are manufacturing them? Who are the ones pushing them on you?
Yeah. It's like Deep Throat said, follow the money.
It's the same story again and again. It is this, you know, follow the money. Que bono. Who benefits? Yeah. And you will, when you follow it, I've spent 30 years looking into so many different assassinations, so-called terror acts, I don't even think there is such a thing as a real terrorist anymore.
No, I don't think so either.
Every single time.
May I correct you on that? There is such a thing as terrorism, okay? Yep. You look in the dictionary, fascism, communism, they're systems of government, right? So is terrorism. You look in the dictionary. Terrorism's a system of government by which the government threatens and uses fear and intimidation and terrorizes the population in order to get them to do what it wants. So, terrorism and terrorists do exist. And they're actually all over the place. The problem is, they're not wearing turbans. They don't have big beards. They're not blowing themselves up as suicide bombers. They're wearing hats with Masonic checkers around them. They have badges, suits, and they have big meetings and stuff like that in public. You see them on the TV all the time. You don't realize that these are the terrorists.
I stand corrected. This is exactly the way it is. This is the way it is. And that's why it's so important to uncover groups like the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and so on, to see who are part of these spider webs and where is their loyalty, actual loyalty, not they say that we're elected by the people. Well, bollock, you're just raping us, you're just screwing us over. You know, where's the loyalty? And then once you start seeing that these members, and there are many other groups as well, but these are quite high up in the hierarchy, in the power pyramid, that you will see that, my God, this person, whoever it is, if it's the prime minister or the royal family or whoever, you cannot trust this person.
Yeah.
If they're involved with this, it's an absolute no-no. Do not listen. Do not let this person control your life.
Yeah. That's why my two basic assumptions are, if it comes from officialdom, whatever they're telling you, it's probably the opposite. And if you can't make it in your own kitchen, then it's probably a soft kill by a weapon.
Yep.
I might be wrong, but so far my assumption's been correct, you know, pretty much 99.99% of the time.
No, but I tell you, Vinny, it's wonderful in one way, because if you follow the steps by what they lead us trying to push onto it when it comes to drugs and food and whatever, I mean, that attacking from all over the place, it's very obvious. You just need to do the exact opposite. They say, take this pill, I go for the vitamins. Do not take vitamins. Well, I do take vitamins. Do not use colloidal silver. Use colloidal silver. They're making it very obvious. Use GMOs. Do not use GMOs. Do you know, they're making it quite easy. Just like you say, if it comes from official grounds, do not listen to it or do the opposite.
Yeah.
Stand up, be a free man, make your own choices, and that's the way to go.
Yeah. And you know what's real funny is that you get branded as just anti-authority. Well, I don't know about you, but I draw authority from three sources. Number one, my parents, because they're responsible. They brought me into this world. Number two, myself, because I'm in charge of myself. And three, I don't leave that to government or anything. I leave that to the man upstairs. Whatever higher spiritual force or God or anything like that is up there, there's something. I'm pretty convinced of it. And if there is a good force in this world, and surely there's an evil force and what have you, I'd say I'd probably rather regard the good as an authority rather than the evil scumbaggery, which I can actually prove has no basis, or rather rational basis, for their presumed authority.
I can only agree once again. But at the same time, it's also important, I think, to not just blame the dark forces, but also see that in this reality we're living in, there's a duality there. You need left to see right. You need up to understand down. You need to sad to be able to understand happy.
You need the dark in order to see the light.
You need dark to see the light. That's the whole thing. And in this universe, there is this struggle between the light and the dark. It's been for if you look, all the old stories, you know, with a knight going up against a dragon, you know, it's been the same story for centuries and generations and thousands of years back. It's the same story. Now we're in a high-tech version of it, but it's a more, I would say this is an amazing, very challenging, but amazing time to be alive, because this is the time, I believe, that we're very, very close to take the step to the next level. And in my opinion, we're coming into an absolute beautiful time, I think, because I don't know if you have seen these experiments where they have like a loudspeaker they put on the floor, and then they put a piece of cardboard on top of it, then they put sand on top of it. When they put a low frequency in the loudspeaker, the cardboard starts shaking, and the sand just rearrange itself into like a beautiful, beautiful pattern, almost like a snowflake pattern. Then when you raise the energy, when you raise the frequency, then the pattern stays the same. And then after a while, it starts shaking. And suddenly, it doesn't go gradually, it just goes, and it just chops into a new, beautiful, very different, but absolutely beautiful new pattern, like a snowflake again. You raise the frequency, it goes again, it doesn't move, then it starts shaking, and boom, it goes, it's like locks into a new beautiful pattern again. Don't ask me how it's done or whatever, but this is the way what happens when frequency goes up. And I think that we are in the evolution of the human race, we are in one of these where the energy is going up. They say that it started in the 1980s there sometimes, and now we are at a point where everything is shaking, everything looks, it doesn't look everybody go, it's too much. That's when it's shaking. If we can just continue to raise the energy very shortly, I think our lives, everything will just lock into a new way of life that we have not seen before. I think it would look more or less the same, but the feeling will be totally different. And the feeling, I think what is going to happen is that we're going to come to a point where duality suddenly stops to exist. We have evolved into the next level where we stop seeing each other as separate, where we stop seeing each other as competitors or enemies, but that we suddenly start seeing each other as brothers and sisters, as one, together with Mother Earth, that we can just help and support and lift this whole thing. So I think we're at a super, super time. You know, this is not a time to sit and pick your nose and change the other channel. This is a time to wake up and be part of this whole thing, be proud of it, stand in honor, stand in transparency, and be courageous. Mm. This is a good time. Well, you know, the native Indians, they say that this is the time when the souls, the strongest of the strong of our ancestors' souls, had come down to this earth to be part of this whole thing. So we who are alive are the strongest of the strong. We can cope with this. We can cope with this. It's just a matter of do not get buy into their fear games.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing. You don't know what you're capable of coping with until you're forced to cope with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like you don't know how brave you are until you have to really be really brave, you know. And I've got this idea that, I don't know, it's kind of like networking to a degree. I don't know if you've ever done this or seen somebody do this, but I've done this. You walk into a party, you don't know anybody, but within moments, you're complimenting this person, you're complimenting that person, you're showing this person a new thing that they can do, or a new mixer with their drink or something like that. And it's almost like you become like a billiard ball, actually being forced into the situation where you can hit all the other balls and actually put them down into the slots precisely where they need to be. And I think this is actually a good way of analogizing just how effective one person with a little push can actually have profound effects on the lives of others. And we have a profound responsibility, I think, then, inherent in our powers. And one thing that you said before is about how everybody needs to wake up, and you also said that you can't force people to wake up. That's what we need to do, but you can't force them to do it, much like you can't force a horse to water. And so what I was thinking is that something that Dr. Rima Labo from the Dr. Rima Truth Reports told me is that statistically speaking, in order to accept an idea that is alien to you, you need 7 different people to mention the exact same thing for you before it sinks into your brain and you're capable of accepting it. And that actually triggered a profound realization in me, like, oh my God. If I just say one thing to one person, like a little information time grenade bomb or something like that, you just pull the pin, throw the information in there, and you're just like, hopefully, if I throw my grenade in and 6 other people throw their grenade in, it'll blow up in that person's face and wake them out of their slumber. You know, and it's all just about playing your part, because I've seen so many people in this movement take responsibility for waking everybody else up. And as a result of trying to wake everybody else up, they never wake up to the truth themselves.
You can only do the one in the mirror. You know, the man in the mirror, that's the only one you can actually control. So you have to do it yourself. Don't try and do it with everyone else. You wake up and raise your energy and people around you will start changing.
Yeah. I remember my family were actually pretty aggressive and kind of don't listen to me. They still don't listen to me to an extent, but they respect me now because I've made quite the success of myself out of this industry. You know, I've become a pretty prolific talk radio show host. I've interviewed celebrities and stuff from all over the place. I've got a huge network of people out there, thousands of Facebook friends and fans and an income from it and all of that kind of stuff. So they don't openly criticize me about thinking these things anymore because they know that I can't be doing something totally wrong because I'm very sane. I still sound pretty intelligent, don't I? And I'm being successful at what I'm doing. So it lends credibility to everything that I say, to a degree. Even though they still don't entirely believe me, even though they still haven't totally woken up, many of them have asked me questions. Those kind of questions where you kind of get an inkling like, they might be starting to get a little bit of it now. Like my sister once asked me, are chemtrails in any way related to Monsanto? You know, it was just like, I gotcha. All right, well, we're coming to the end of our first hour now. What I'd actually like to do, just before we take that break, is I'd like to play a clip for you, ladies and gentlemen. This is a speech that John F. Kennedy gave about the American frontier. We'll return just after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
The pioneers gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives to build our new West. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world. Some would say that those struggles are all over, that all the horizons have been explored, that all the battles have been won, that there is no longer an American frontier. And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of unknown opportunities and perils. Beyond that frontier are uncharted areas of science and space, unsolved problems of peace and war, unconquered province of ignorance and prejudice. I'm asking each of you to be pioneers towards that new frontier. My call is to the young in heart, regardless of age. Can we carry through in an age where we will witness not only new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds? All mankind waits upon our decision. A whole world looks to see what we shall do. And we cannot fail that trust, and we cannot fail to try.